This is Theology on the Go, a brief interview about an eternal truth.
What I started to realize is that people, while they are concerned about right feeling, the authority by which they are trying to determine what is the right feeling isn't even that of Scripture.
Hello and welcome to Theology on the Go. I am Jonathan Master, and I'm joined here by my friend and co-host, James Dalzell. James, how are you?
I'm well, Jonathan.
We are delighted to welcome our next guest because he's someone whom we see 5 days a week and have the privilege of working alongside, Dr. Keith Plummer. Dr. Plummer is a professor at Cairn University, where James and I also teach. And if I can give you a little picture as listeners of our hallway, James and Keith are at one end and they're always talking together, and I'm all the way at the other end, and I sometimes have to walk down to join them. Sometimes they make the long march down toward me, but this is exciting for me to get a chance to have all three of us talking at the same time. Keith, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
We want to talk just for a few minutes here about emotions. It seems as if, particularly in our circles, that the idea of how you feel about something is sort of the prime arbiter of whether or not it's truthful. And so I want to get at this just by talking about emotions a little bit. Are emotions an important part of our human condition, and specifically in our lives as Christians? How would you see the emotions fitting into our lives as believers?
Well, I think there are two poles to be avoided. One is to make too much of emotions, and the other one is to adopt some kind of stoicism where we say, well, they don't really play any part. I would think in terms of creation, either we've got to see emotions as a result of the fall in total, or we have to say that God created us as humans, as image bearers, with emotions, and that because they play a significant role in terms of our relationships, both with each other and with God. And the Bible is filled with a lot of reference to emotions with respect to when certain things are appropriate causes of rejoicing, even anger, and other times when sorrow and sadness are appropriate. So I would say they are important to the Christian life and just to the experience of being human.
One of the things that we see today, though, is that people will say, I feel something, and therefore that means it's true. I get emails all the time, I'm sure you do as well, where someone will say, I feel as if my grade should be different in this class, or I feel as if, you know, this should have been handled differently and the outcome should be different. Why do you think it is that kind of language has become so pervasive? And what should we say about that as Christians?
Well, whenever I come across that kind of language, like in a paper, I am quick to cross it out and say, think. If someone is really meaning to say what it is that they're trying to make an argument for, but I do see that feel and think are used synonymously by a number of people, particularly a number of young people. And I think that some people are of the mind that as long as I say I feel, I don't really need an argument. I don't need to offer any kind of support. This is the strongest case to be made. And I think that has to do with the rampant subjectivism that our culture is assuming, and that bleeds into our Christian life as well.
Keith, if you have someone write that in a paper or give that as in place of an argument, I feel that. You've mentioned briefly that feelings and emotions certainly have a place and an important place in the human condition and even the Christian experience. But I'm wondering if, in a certain sense, saying I feel incubates your position from a traditional response. Like, how could you say, if someone says, well, I feel this way, it seems sort of awkward to say, well, you're wrong about that.
I mean, yeah.
Like how could you be wrong about what you're feeling?
Right. And, you know, I think that makes me think about how sometimes Christians will say things like the only thing that can't be argued with as a changed life. And so we talked to her about our experience as opposed to giving reasons for why we believe that Christianity is true. And I think you're on to something that maybe by couching things in terms of feeling, we are isolating or insulating ourselves from criticism. And also, it could be that in couching things in terms of what I feel, I am alleviating the necessity to offer reasons or support in support of what it is that I'm claiming.
Well spoken by an apologetics professor. I know certainly how you would approach that. So maybe this question, I'll turn it a little bit. Sometimes we talk about feelings as if they're the sorts of things that can be directed or instructed. We talk about, you know, we're going to come and learn how to feel about something as opposed to how to think about it or how to behave. Are emotional responses, can they be right or wrong? And if so, can they be taught or directed?
We can't simply, if it's a matter of can I will myself in a particular moment to muster up a particular feeling, I would say no. But I would say that the truth of God and the practice of truth, I believe, are the kinds of things that we have to engage in order to move more in the direction of right feeling.
So maybe putting those together, I think you and I in a conversation sometime past, we were talking about this new prioritization of feeling where we bypass the mind and we bypass the conduct or ethics and we go straight to, and we try to sort of short circuit and go straight to getting the feelings right. And I think you use the term orthopathy. The idea of right feeling or right passions is the new sort of leading orthodoxy in a sense. I'm wondering how you would situate, if there is such a thing as orthopathy, that is to say, right or sound feelings, a right way to emotively respond to something. How would you situate that vis-a-vis orthodoxy, right thinking or right doctrine, or orthopraxy, right practice? In other words, are those just three categories that can be addressed independent of each other, or is there a certain order among them in terms of how we address feelings?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that term orthopathy, and what I started to realize is that people, while they are concerned about orthopathy, right feeling, the authority by which they are trying to determine what is the right feeling isn't even that of Scripture necessarily. It's of the self. And so I think there is such thing as real orthopathy, but I do believe that that is to be a fruit of orthodoxy and orthopraxy in the sense of my knowing, trusting, and obeying the truth of God. And that resulting in, though imperfectly to be sure, that resulting in my emotions being more well-formed and informed.
So, Keith, I'm wondering, we've talked a little bit about how this manifests itself just in people's language. They'll say, I feel this, and they really mean, I think this. And so sometimes it just becomes a language issue, but it does seem as if, particularly in certain areas of moral judgment, certain kinds of objections to the Christian faith, the notion of feelings being the driver has become more prominent. And so I'm wondering if you could give us some areas where you've seen that in particular. In other words, I think what you're arguing is feelings are important and they need to be brought in line with truth. But oftentimes it's viewed in exactly the opposite way. The truth must reflect what it is that I feel. And so I think we all agree that there's that broader trend. Are there specific areas where you've really seen that come to the forefront and you've had to take it on at more than just a linguistic level, more than just the level of, oh, you really mean I think?
Sure. I think one of the areas that we see this increasingly is in believers who, desirous of experiencing some kind of divine guidance, will identify strong urges, desires and so forth as like divine directives. And so if I'm feeling this, this is God leading me to do whatever this is. And it may not be something that is, you know, obviously someone might try to rationalize sinful things that way. But I think even things that in themselves are not sinful, that would be good things. I've seen many believers assume that their emotions are kind of primary means by which God just tells them what to do. So there's an identification with, you know, almost the voice of God in some respects, that I'm having this strong feeling. Another place where I see this, I was just reading through some apologetics papers where students had to ask certain questions of a non-Christian. It didn't have to be an atheist necessarily. It could be anyone who is not identifying as a Christian. And as you mentioned, objections to the Christian faith, I was really overwhelmed by the number of times that someone said things like, I don't feel it's right for God to control our lives. I don't feel it's right for God to judge. I don't feel it's right to tell someone else that their beliefs are in error. And it's so pervasive. I was really, really struck by how common that is.
Those are two interesting examples, because on the one hand, feelings are seen as the way in which we know what God is saying to us or telling right. us to do. And on the other hand, feelings are being used to stand in judgment of what mm-hmm. God has said in pretty specific ways, and to say that because I feel this, God can't have actually meant what he said, and that can't be true.
Exactly.
There, it seems, Keith, like what you're describing, that there's a new sense in which the I feel becomes the new thou shalt or thou shalt not, and the I yeah. feel becomes the new, you know, this is what you shall believe, or this is what is true. So that instead of feelings being like, let's say, informed by a right understanding of righteousness or goodness or beauty, rather than having some sort of objective reality that guides and either, you know, repulses or attracts us emotively, rather the emotions themselves are telling us what is true and lovely and good and ought be done.
Yes.
And maybe that's the prioritizing of orthopathy that you and I have discussed for over time.
Yes. I don't know if, I think we've talked about this in the past, but if you remember the Sprite commercial that used the tagline, obey your thirst.
Right.
I think that was a masterful slogan, because, you know, it's talking about more than just obedience to your physical thirst, but it's saying that if there's an authority that is going to be submitted to, it is your desires, your feelings, and so forth. And I think that is what many of us as Christians and many non-Christians are functionally operating according to, as you put it, and I think you put it very well, that the authority, the thou shalt or thou shalt not, is what I feel. And it, in some cases, particularly in the non-Christian category, because Christians would say, well, of course, God is above my feelings, but in a non-Christian mindset, there is nothing higher than the self. So, yeah, I do think that is something that is very prevalent.
Do you find, Keith, that when you challenge people on this, either within the context of the Christian church or even outside of it, do you find that they are generally receptive? In other words, do they... at some level understand that, yes, you're right, that's not really an argument? Or do you think it's become so pervasive that, in fact, that is an argument that people at a conscious level think should rule the day?
I so desperately want to say the former, but I think it is so prevalent that people are often very defensive of the challenge, no matter how politely it might be offered, because it is seen as, in some cases, as infringing on someone's rights. In other cases, it is seen as, particularly when you're dealing with Christians who are relying upon their feelings as a source of divine guidance, it's seen as calling into question something that is dear and precious to them, and perhaps even challenging their view of God, or they perceive it as challenging their relationship with God, which is not what is intended. But I think that it is more resisted than acknowledged as, well, there's something there. There are some cases where people will do that, but overall, I think that it's been so deeply entrenched that people are a lot more resistant.
It is deeply entrenched, and yet at the same time, it strikes me that there are a number of forces at work to get us, to convince us, by any means possible, to feel certain ways about certain things. So on the one hand, mm-hmm. there is this authority given to your feelings, but on the other hand, you'd better feel certain ways about certain things, or else you're guilty of a thought crime, at least.
Yes, and yeah, you're right about that. But even there, I think that the appeals that are made are appealing to the emotions more than anything rational, even in that case.
Right. No, that's a good point.
But, yeah.
So the orthopathy, though, does become a sort of replacement orthodoxy, in a sense, and it becomes the new thou shalt not. It's interesting. It's a subjective standard, but then there's a desire in our culture to apply that standard objectively and universally.
Yes.
So that I think at the end of the day, even those who prioritize the feelings believe that there is such a thing as orthopathy. There is a right way to emotively respond. And we might think of atrocities that we respond with righteous indignation or with appropriate, you know, repulsion or fear, or, you know, there are right ways to respond. But the question is, again, for us as Christians, what is our standard by which to direct and shape our emotions in a God-honoring way, submitted to His truth and to His counsel?
Correct. And I think another factor that contributes to this is to invest in what you just described. It takes time. It takes thought, contemplation. It takes, as we were discussing before, practice. I think some of the things that James K. A. Smith has brought about in terms of the relationship between our desires and emotions and the habits, the cultural liturgies that we give ourselves to, come into play here as well. And it is so much easier and more immediate to just aim for the emotions than to invest in what is necessary for the formation of our desires and our emotions according to the truth of God, and submitting to that.
Keith, you're a true friend. We couldn't have asked just anyone to come on and talk about feelings. So we really appreciate your willingness to do this. It is an important topic, in all seriousness. We want to be people who do not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoice in the truth. And this has given us a lot to think about along those lines. So thanks a lot, Keith.
Sure. Great talking with you guys. Look forward to seeing you in the halls.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Theology on the Go. If there is anyone that you know who might benefit from hearing this program, feel free to please pass it along to them. We're available on placefortruth.org and wherever you download podcasts. If you are able to make a donation to the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals in order to help with projects like Theology on the Go, you can do that on placefortruth.org or on alliancenet.org, and that'll also help you keep up with all the other events that are upcoming and all the other resources that are available from the Alliance. And thanks, as always, for listening to Theology on the Go, a brief interview about an eternal truth.